Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is your host, Fran Lewis. This is MJ Network. MJ, after my sister Marsha Joyce, and wait till you learn about this absolutely fantastic author, Davin Goodwin, is here, Diver's Paradise, and let me give you a taste of my book review. By the way, people, the five stars are shining, and they've been shining since 4 o'clock this morning, because I didn't want to forget to shine them. Roscoe is the character. He's smart and can further himself on this beautiful Caribbean island that I wish I was on right now. Author Davin Goodwin keeps the fast pace fast, the action explosive, and the scenes of this paradise vividly depicted that you, the reader, will want to take a long trip to this Caribbean island. Lives are at stake, the suspense is high, and the tension builds until the explosive ending. Characters that are strong, beer that's plentiful if you're thirsty, friendships that are tested, and we hear the final shots, and hopefully peace will return to this diver's paradise. That is the last paragraph of my brilliant review. What can I say? So, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you, Fran.
I am glad that you are here. And this, I have to tell you, was unique. You started this, created the first scene. We meet the killer. This was great because you don't know who it is, called The Neighborhood. How did you create this scene, and how did you create a reader's description? You don't know who he is. And it's only a hint that it was death dealing with retribution and revenge, my favorite thing. So how did you create that, and why did you call it The Neighborhood, him the neighbor, or her, The Neighborhood?
Well, so that first chapter went through probably a dozen different revisions. It started off with an incident in the park where Sass, and then who I call neighbor, ambushed his victim, and it was a big conversation, and I got to thinking, you know, wouldn't it be better if he just snuck into their house and you know, killed the wife and then killed his, you know, when his target came in, it went through several different iterations. And what I went on was I had mentors at the time when I was writing this, or when I first started, that said, make sure you get the action pack. Make sure to grab hold of and to want each to figure out why did this happen, and you know what's the outcome like. And a whole bunch of questions in the reader's mind, and while I'm actually dropping a few hints about the assassin and what's going on, but like they went through probably a dozen different iterations. And it was a lot of conversation who helped me through it.
That is interesting, because I was like, who is this person? So you've got a unique character here. You've got Roscoe. So why did he come to live in Bonaire? And tell us about this island and why everybody would probably rather be there than here right now.
Well, Roscoe, I picture him as a character who, you know, he just wants a laid-back life. He wants lots of nice warm weather. He likes sitting on his deck and drinking a beer and watching the ocean. He wants to do that, you know, all year long. And he likes to scuba dive and be in the water and enjoy, you know, the water aspect of the island. Bonaire is an island in the far southern Caribbean off the coast of Venezuela. My wife Leslie and I have traveled 30 trips to the island over the last 20, and most of those are for extended periods of time. We really enjoy the island. We like scuba diving. We like the people. We like the pleasant atmosphere. It's a very, very laid-back island. I actually refer to it as the Arkansas of the Caribbean because it's so laid-back. And I thought, well, if I'm going to write a book, I ought to somehow write about something to do with the island of Bonaire. And I knew it was going to be a mystery, so I thought, well, why not create a murder mystery on the island of Bonaire? The only bad thing that probably the book tends to do is it might people think there's a whole bunch of murder going on, but it's really, you know, I look at it as kind of like Cabot Cove, or Murder, She Wrote happened. I mean, little dad having all those murders all the time. I mean, it's there are Sparta, Mississippi with, that series. So the island does not have that kind of crime. It's very, very good island, very nice people, very good place and spend time. That's all just for my character.
Well, now that you said it, on the 26th of May, the one and only John Land, who's doing the Murder, She Wrote series in Cabot Cove, will join us for a Murder of 12. Trust me.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yes. Well, I read it a while ago. The fun part of doing me is that I get the books before everybody else does, and now people on Facebook want to know my secret, and I'm not telling them. I said, become a reviewer, maybe you'll get lucky. What can I say? So, why did he retire, and what exactly does he do now? And this guy's got a lot of local color. He's different, let me tell you.
Well, he retired, and he narrates this in the book a little bit about the fact that he moved to the island. He didn't want to just retire and do nothing, you know. He wanted to be part of the local community. He wanted to, you know, be involved and have some a little bit. So that's why he bought this little mom-pa hotel right along the ocean, and he caters frugal, money-wise people who want to come to the island and live on a budget for a couple weeks while they're scuba diving. The problem is he's a huge procrastinator, and, you know, running a mom-pa hotel actually require him to work on it. If it's just changing light bulbs, and he kind of come to find out he'd rather kind of not procrastinate, and that has his office manager who's very diligent and very much task oriented and wants to get things done and wants to make taken care of before the end of the day. There.
So that's Erica. She's very faithful to him. How come?
Yep.
And then he gets a phone call. Well, let's talk about Erica first.
Sure, I actually patterned Erica off of a character or a person on the island itself who used to be an office manager slash receptionist at one of the dive resorts that we used to go to in one of the dive operations. So I kind of patterned her after that. And the whole task-oriented, let's get things done, let's move forward all the time, that's a little bit of a trait my wife has, and I'm a little bit of a procrastinator. So it's kind of the same kind of relationship that my wife and I have, where she's task-oriented, making sure things get done. She works diligently. You know, she can't sit still, whereas, you know, I'm very, very easy to put anything on the back deck with, you know, when the yard needs to be mowed. So kind of the same type situation there.
She's just like me. We would get along just fine. I know it was my mother's thing. Yeah, if something needs to be done, I'm not going to wait and do it. I'm just going to do it. Like, I have 20 books inside all of a sudden, and I can see myself reading 5 within the next 2 days, because it's just like, you got to get it done. You got to do it, because people are depending on you. And my husband's the same way. I'll do it when I feel like it. Not good. So, you do that?
I was going to say, I was listening to your conversation with Dick Belsky the other day, and you said something about you read like 1,000 books a year or something like that, or 2,000 books a year?
I read over 10,000 in the last 10 years, and sometimes I read a couple, about 500-600 in a year, the truth of the matter is it's my mother's fault. When I was 3, I learned to read, seriously, and she never let me stop. When I was 3 and a half, she told me I was going to be a reading specialist, which I am. By profession, I'm a reading and writing specialist. I taught kids with learning disabilities. It was my most fun. I loved it. When my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I had the misfortune of having to retire early. But that doesn't mean my family doesn't use me as the chief essay, homework, and term paper person till this day. So I read up to like 6 to 10 books a week besides Hebrew, piano, violin, and every other lesson except for dancing lessons, which I hated, seriously. And I had to take notes on them. So that's why after I read your book, I could tell you the book from cover to cover without having to look at it. I have a photographic memory. It scares me too sometimes. Yeah, I do. And do I like doing this? Yeah, you know something? It's fun. I help people, and I don't mind, but I'll be very honest. If it takes me more than a day and a half to read a book, you're in trouble. You're not in trouble. That's the truth. And I just started a YA book this morning, and I'll probably finish it after this later because it's really that good, and it's different. And kids need to read more, people. So you got a phone call that sets the events to come to motion. Tell us about Bill and Mary Beth Ryberg. That was a tissue scene. Why their death affected him so deeply, and it's really started a chain of events that, whoa, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, Bill and Mary Beth Bill was his work buddy and partner for many, many years, and to a certain extent, his mentor. He learned a lot from Bill Ryberg. He thought Bill Ryberg was the best detective that he'd ever met. And, you know, it was one of those things where after people retire, you know, or switch jobs or whatever, there's always this, hey, you know what, let's stay in touch and, you know, sure, once a week, and it becomes once a week. On, and then it's a phone call every 6 months, and it's a phone call every 5 months. After Bill's death, Roscoe realized that's what happened to their relationship. Even though they were close friends, it was a situation where they just didn't make the time to see each other because they always thought, well, we got tomorrow, and that tomorrow Roscoe realized was never going to happen again. Well, that affected him because I put on the back burner. And he treasured it an awful lot, mainly because of Bill's, you know, took him under his wing and affected Bill as a.
Are you on a cell phone or something?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I know, because it keeps coming in and out. It's a little staticky, but that's okay. I can hear you. I'm just wanting you to know. I don't know how it's going to come back on the tape, but whatever. So why does a police detective, this was really cool, in the old precinct agree to give him certain information, and then he's smart. See, he's like me too. He's not going to stop until he gets the rest. So how does he do that, and are they doing a thorough investigation of their murders, or is that why he decided it's his turn to find out what really happened?
Yeah, he. I guess he was in a situation where he wanted to find out. He wanted to, you know, he was compelled to know. But he was 2,000 miles away on this island. How are you going to find out? So he kind of poked a little bit there. It is the police station and some paperwork that and so that's how he kind of started trying to piece up the. But then things started happening on the island, as you threw him in the direction. And, you know, I hate to say too much for anybody that hasn't read it, he got to the conclusion or how he went out. But, you know, I got some, I have a few friends I have a couple friends who are police. They kind of helped me with the idea that, he sees something in the paperwork or he talks to somebody and he comes up, you know, Roscoe comes up with an idea or a hypothesis that everybody else missed, you know. So, I mean, after all, he is the hero of the book. He has to have the insight and see something that nobody else sees.
That's why I liked him. Besides the fact that he knows how to get it done. Sort of. That's good. So tell us about Traverso and Larry David, and then we're going to talk about the character that I really like the best, besides Roscoe.
Okay. So, Mike Traverso, I felt like I needed to have a good Italian name. And Mike Traverso is an Italian restaurant now. And so I used his name, and he's got this, I picture this real scruffy voice, and kind of almost like a Dangerville type of voice when I picture his. And you know, they weren't real good friends, and they're kind of acquaintances. And Mike Traverso sure knew about Mary Beth. He didn't want Roscoe interfering with anything about it. And then Larry David, more of feedback detective who's a tramp to the Rock, Illinois area from Arkansas, and he wants to make sure that he just kind of wants to a certain extent and actually also get some information purpose, but it love hate between all three of them to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now the character that I like, Arabella. I really like Arabella. She's my
cut.
Did you get any flack about that one? Did you get any flack about that?
Flack? Why would I get flack? I don't know.
I don't know, because she's so much younger, and she's so pretty.
Well, again, I caught in that a little bit after my wife is younger than I am, so I kind of eat some of that. And
that's nice.
So Arabella, I didn't even realize that I was writing her as such a powerful character until people started telling me how much. And I never really, you know, I've always been surrounded by power. My wife is an assistant controller at a company. Is vice chancellor at university in Malibu. I've been surrounded by these powerful women. I just didn't think anything of it when I started. I was just going to be Conklin's equal or more, you know, and just, I didn't even try. She's definitely a fan favorite, I'll tell you. And it's fun to listen to people. What's that?
I told you. I know.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. In the next book, I mean, she's a main book, and actually she gets a little more authority with in the next book, and that really adds a lot to her character, I think. It also adds a lot to her in Roscoe. So I think it's...
That is good.
And,
now, what bothered me, I was very upset, is that somebody had the nerve to attack my guy, Roscoe. So how is it handled? He gets hurt a lot. That really bothered me, seriously.
Well, so when I was growing up, my dad used to watch all of these 1970s serial police movies, you know, Streets of San Francisco, Kojak, Max, Columbo. His favorite one, and it's interesting because I heard Belsky talk about this the other day, my dad's favorite one was The Rockford Files. And
my father too.
He loved it. And there was three things my dad said you could always count on during a Rockford Files episode. One was Jim Rockford would not get paid. And the third thing is Rockford would beat up sometime during the episode. And I really thought about that. No, I like the beat up part. So I'm gonna get possible situation where he gets beat up, he gets a little hurt. Affect him going forward. He's not, you know, the classic. No, he wasn't this tough guy. He's kind of like in a fight. I want to figure out if it's possible. You know, I'm in trouble if I can and try and solve it with words. And that to make Roscoe kind of play into that. You know, tough guy detective or former cop. He's very easily from violence to a certain extent.
Well, that's good. Sometimes you've got to defend yourself. Now we've got two characters that I was suspicious of from the start. This is just because I guess I read so much that after a while I can sort of like, you know, figure things out, but I never say if I get the ending because I don't give it away ever. Okay, so what happened, who is Tiffany and Lester? They're visiting the island, but I got a question mark after them when I was reading it. That's all I'll say.
So Tiffany is a friend of Roscoe's from years and years ago who had been to the island previously to visit him and go scuba diving, and she had make a return trip. To, you know. Lester is her that she brought along on this trip, and he's... A little bit of a jerk. I mean, he doesn't treat her really well. It bothers her.
Yeah, I don't like him at all. I want to smack him in the head.
Yeah, well, glad. Good. That means I did my job. You weren't supposed to like him.
Yeah, you did. I got that. I said to her, you know, Tiffany, dump the guy. You don't need him. Seriously.
Roscoe thought the same thing. He couldn't understand. And so, you know, big brother character to Tiffany. And so he's always like, why is she putting up with this? He didn't like was treating, you know, that Lester was Tiffany. And so it was a situation with more content there and more questions that you know, reader had. And hopefully, like you said, the reaction that didn't like Lester because it's really.
Yeah, Cheryl said you're still coming in kind of whatever. So if you could speak closer into the microphone, maybe it won't drop out because I want this interview to be heard by the world afterwards. So,
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm right on the mic. So
yeah, no, maybe it's just that happens on my cell phone too. Sometimes my cell phone doesn't want me to answer it also. So it decides that it's not going to connect. It's been doing that a lot. So who is Chuck?
Okay.
And this is another character that I found. He was interesting. Who is Chuck and why does he get Roscoe to do flight trips? He sort of cons him into it, which is not very nice.
So the Chuck Studer character is another person that's based on a real-life friend of mine.
Oh, cool.
He's a pilot and an aviation mechanic, owns his own shop. And Chuck and I, we used to do some flying together. I'm a pilot also. And we spend many a night, you know, sitting around the airport. I knew I had to write him in. I sent out Rockford files on the show, Jim Rockford, brother and Angel. And this person seemed to have some kind of scheme going on the side, something that he picked up in a few dollars, and it was always going to get rich. And Rockford always had to either or bail him or help him out or come to the rest. A little subplot on there. So that's kind of what I did with Chuck. I tried to this person that's kind of like the guy floating around Conklin that just kind of pulls him away.
The next part upset me greatly. Poor Arabella.
Okay.
She went to get food, and poor Arabella. That's not good that somebody took her. And then Roscoe has to explain it to her sister Ruth. Oh, God, that was really So what happens to poor Arabella? Hopefully she'll make it. And what does Roscoe do and explain her sister Ruth? And then Ruth reminds me of my mother, so you can tell she's tough. No, seriously.
Seriously.
Oh, boy.
Without giving too much of it away, I mean...
No, don't. We don't want people to know, but they have to read the book.
Yeah. So I needed something for Roscoe to focus on, something to worry about, and something to kind of help the readers understand the relationship between Roscoe and Arabella, how much he does care for her. And by her getting, you know, and by that situation, I think that helps a little bit. And Ruth again, is based on a person that I know on the island of Bonaire. Not much in real life. She's American. Red hair and late, and so I and her husband, and the whole idea of the Bob, somewhere along years ago, and Ruth will never admit that something about she had, it'd be a whorehouse or something like that, she said. So I used to actually give her a chance at her fancy job, you know. So, but they're fun characters to write. And like I say, Ruth doesn't like Roscoe. Adds
I know.
Tension, Ruth and Arabella, and it you know, works out as a nice little trio there.
Yeah, my mother was very perceptive and very particular too. So really, it was interesting. I've become like her, not like that, but I'm very perceptive too. It's strange. She would either like you, or even with the Alzheimer's, she'd walk you into a room and she'd go, "I don't like," and Jewish, she would say, "I don't like that person," and I go, "You know, Ma, you're right."
Wow. Yeah, there you go.
Needless to say, so things calmed down, and who dared to tamper with his Jeep? And how did he find out? That was not very nice of them.
Yeah, and there again, that's a situation that I don't know if he ever does really find out what happened. It was one of those things that there's a lot of assumptions made. And again, I'm going on a lot of my police buddies who say, hey, you know what, lots of times in an investigation or a crime, you don't answer all the questions. You answer the main ones, and then you make assumptions and come to conclusions based on the answers to the big ones. And so that's kind of what I did there. I kind of hung it out there, had a few things point one direction, and hopefully, you know, it's a little bit realistic from the standpoint that you solve the major questions, and then the minor questions either don't matter or you make assumptions and extrapolate from that point. So, again, I need it to happen. I drive a Jeep myself, by the way, and I would be devastated if anything ever happened to it. So,
I know that. It's so sad. I know. We had my car too. We were parked before I moved up here in the Bronx, and somebody had the nerve to just hit right into the back of the car and leave and destroy the whole back end. Yeah, well, we were lucky because the people that were in the store opposite the laundromat came out and told us where they were, and we got them.
Well, you're lucky you weren't in it.
I was like, that would have been horrible. The guy was 95 years old. He shouldn't have been driving, and he took out $500 to hand to my husband to make it go away, and I called the police. Because, I'm dumb and stupid. I'm not, So, now we have poor Tiffany. Oh, this is so sad. This is another tissue. What happens to Tiffany when she goes on solo dive? And how does he know she didn't drown? Poor Tiffany. Everybody's against everybody. That's not good.
Yeah. Again, I liked the diving element of it. I mean, the island. And there's always a big controversy between divers on whether you should or should not solo dive. And, solo diving is, I've done it myself. It's just a matter of preparation. And Tiffany wasn't prepared. And that's what the assumption was. And so, again, Roscoe digs into it a little deeper, looks at a few things that make sense, and then I'll come to the conclusion that, hey, she really drowned. I'll play. And I think the readers know that, it ends up being foul play. So,
well, if you were solo diving, seriously, because I wouldn't go anywhere near that ever, can you communicate with anybody on the outside? Is there any instrument or any way to talk? If you're in trouble, how would anybody know?
And that's kind of the question, and that's the risk factor. You do solo dive is, how do you communicate with anybody? How do you have a problem? But if you look at that, number one, you assume those risks, but you also taking redundant gear and different and redundant air supplies and a regulator, things like that. Have a problem, you're able to take care of that situation for yourself underwater. Don't have that, then you have a risk factor. And it often, a solo dive to 120 feet in Lake Superior, that's different than 30 or 40 feet. The environment you do it is also a factor. So it's only risky if you don't prepare for it, you don't think about it, and you don't have the skills, you have the training for it. All those, and it's extremely.
You have to be brave. You have to be brave to do this. Now, the police want him out of the way. Why? And are they? They're investigating her death and Arabella's death, but are they doing a good job? Because after all, I want them to find out what really happened. And if they don't, they're going to be very upset.
The typical NOR PI situation where police don't want the PI involved, right? They want to stay out of here, investigations away. So that's what kind of that private investigation of literature where it's police are doing their job out of the way. We don't want him. So that was kind of a bad added thing, but it also his significant other is a member of the police force, that adds a little controversy. He wants her to help him information, but he can't because he'll get her in buzz. She wants to help. So it's kind of and it adds a little conflict, a little problem, a little bit of how is he going to work around roadblock.
That is hard. But you're lucky because you have consultants. Whereas somebody like myself, that when I wrote something in my Face is Behind the Stone series, I write it behind the point of view of the dead body behind the gravestone, and I wanted to write something about arson and fire, and the. That you don't get help around here. I mean, they did it speak to one fireman or whatever, but I wanted like a local consultant. So you have to be lucky to get the police to help you, because the regular person, you know, they won't always help you, you know, with what you need to know, and you want to be accurate. So that's
right.
Why there's the internet. Yeah. So what are the different locations on this island that he searches for answers? How come you chose all those different places? Because he doesn't just stay in one place.
No, and the island is not really very big. About 22 or 23 miles long and about 4 miles or 5 miles wide at its widest point. So it's not a very big island. I tried to add some of the places that anybody who's on the island would actually know, especially if they would dive in. So I just wanted to give, you know, the folks who wrote the book a chance to say, oh, I know that spot. I know where that's at, and I've been there. I've seen those salt mounds and stuff like that. So, I've been to the island. And people who've not been to the island, I want to more than just, you know, a couple of divers. There's a lot more going on this island than just scuba diving part of it. Although that.
Well, it's too bad
you didn't
put a picture of the island, because then people would definitely want to hop on a plane during this pandemic and leave. Seriously. But then when you look at the cover, and I know who that is on the cover, I'm not going to say, I got very upset. Yes, okay, I got it. So, poor Roscoe, he gets hurt very easily. How does he deal with pain? And as a detective, he gets blindsided at times. I'm going to have to get him a pair of different glasses so he can see better. So, how does he deal with pain?
Booze. He drinks a lot.
that helps too.
and again, I patterned some of that after my dad. My dad was a person who always, you would never know if he was in pain or hurting because he just didn't talk about it. And he just fought through it. He dealt with it. I think it was that generation that just said, you know what, life is painful, just the way it is. And and so when Colin gets hurt or beat up, he just kind of drinks a few beer, doesn't take very many pain meds, and just goes about his life saying, what? I'll deal with the pain and it'll go away eventually.
You know, my mother used to say that too, suck it up, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And I do it every day. What can I say? So, as the story moves ahead, he seeks out other people to learn more about a specific truck with a specific design going to where it was created. So how does he learn about that?
Well, again, without talking too much about, you know, giving it away, he determined that potentially one of the bad guys was driving a truck with a certain sign on it. So if you're a tourist on the island, you're going to rent a vehicle to drive around in. So he went to some of the truck rental agencies and tried to find out if the truck had that sign on it and how he could train the person who had that truck. Of course, the rental agencies won't give him that information. You know, it was a matter of him trying to drive around this small island with you know, thousands of tourists trying to figure out which truck, you know, who's got it and where and how and why. And you know, as luck would have it, he came across one, but it wasn't the right one. So, again, conflict, a little bit more problems. Mount had to get over as part of the investigation.
Well, before I forget, I don't want to forget because I've got a long list here. My God, I didn't even realize it. On Monday, we're going to do a special edition of of MJ Network on social distancing and wearing a mask and how this pandemic has affected everybody's life. On the 12th, someone we all know and love, Reese Hirsch, Doc Tomorrow. On the 14th, Minister Sam Oliver will be talking with me at 8 o'clock in the morning. For those of you that are up, we're going to talk about healing care and soul caring and hospice care during this pandemic. On the 19th, Pastor Michael Jones will be with me, and we're going to talk about how to deal with stress and anxiety and how to uplift yourself during this time. On the 21st, the King of Horror, Tomb of Gods, Brian Morland. On the 26th, John Land, Murder of 12. And on the 28th, guess who? Davin Goodwin, Tom Walsh, Bruce Coffin, Charles Salzberg, and R.G. Belsky. How do you pick your killer? How do you decide the name of your killer? And how does that killer decide to commit murder? And I emailed you the questions just now.
Okay.
So
I'll make sure my phone's better by then.
Okay. So what could I say? So why Arabella, sound like her, is warned by her inspector not to tell Roscoe anything. And why? And how does she handle not being able to tell him what she wanted to tell him of anything she wanted to say?
Yeah, again, it's the classic PI Noir where the police don't want the PI involved, and so it's like, don't tell anybody. And the fact that, you know, Arabella is well thought of in the police force, she doesn't want to jeopardize. Conklin doesn't, you know, Roscoe doesn't want to ask her because he doesn't want her to put her in the middle. So he kind of, you know, he kind of stays away from trying to ask her anything. Now, she volunteers a little bit of information as things go on, and that's good, and it actually works out to Roscoe's advantage. And it's a situation where, you know, adds a little conflict and adds a little to both of them. They want to help each other, but they don't. They're both in jeopardy with her boss, who's distrusting the boss. I think they handle both of them, but who care for each other? Who's like, okay, I don't want to get into your business here, but if they're, you know, and I'm going to let you figure this out on your own type thing. So.
I know.
I think so.
Why did he drown himself in beer? And he got so drunk one time, I couldn't function reading the book. Seriously. I mean, really,
well,
he was. I don't drink ever. My drink of choice is caffeine, lots of it. Lots of Javalu coffee. And that's my favorite thing to drink, 5-6 times a day. It's great. Keeps me going. So, why does he drown himself in beer, and how does he function at times? Because I couldn't function reading it when he was doing it.
Yeah, and actually, to be honest with you, I pulled a little bit of the drinking back a little bit. My publisher was a little, they said, this looks like he's almost an alcoholic. So I actually did pull some of the drinking back a little bit in some scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it stems from the fact, I think I hint at it a little bit in there, where, you know, part of it's the stereotypical, hey, you know, the policeman sees all this stuff all day long. They go home and they drink. They have problems with their social life. And I just, you know, Hollywood kind of hyperbolates that a little bit, but I think there is some truth to it. And even his he refers in some of his reminiscing about his old partner Bill Ryberg, how Bill had really drank an awful lot in life. And I think it's a situation where Roscoe here, he never drinks anything but involved or tequila or anything like that. We just beer here and there. And I think it's part of the escape from him. It's part of him feeling like, even though he lives still on vacation, beer, and he's going to drink some beer, and I think it's another aspect of his late enjoy the sunshine and enjoy the Caribbean life. So I think it's it also, you know, it reflects some my overindulgence when I actually go to the island and scuba dive a little bit. Or spend out in the sun all day, you know, scuba diving in the evenings. We we sit and watch the sunset and we drink beer and have a good time and class some dinner or something. So I probably, it's probably reflective of a few of my overindulgence myself while I'm on the beach on a Caribbean island. So again, the next book is not widespread, but hey, you know, I look at it this way. When I couldn't think of anything else to write, Conklin and Roscoe go get a beer. So it's kind of, it was my Achilles heel to a certain extent, I guess.
I guess people go away on vacation and they tend to drink more and have more fun. Now, this character, I love his name. It just sort of fits. Inspector Schlepper, which is a perfect name for him. Tell us about him and what did you call him? You know, people that are just whatever, schlep around, that's so perfect. And so tell us about Inspector Schlepper and how you came up with that name and why does he change his attitude towards Roscoe? I didn't know to laugh or cry when I heard that one. That was really good.
Some of the names I came up with for the Dutch and the locals who live on the island, I basically have a Bonaire phone book. And I'll go through the phone book and I'll look at names and I'll say, oh, that's the kind of name. That's a good sound. Stuff like that. And I portrayed the inspector as, you know, the island is a Dutch island, and there's a lot of Dutch folks on the island in addition to the local Papiamento Antillean population. But there's a lot of Dutch. Dutch are very, I don't want to say they're rude, but they're forthright. And they're very, tell you the way it is, you know, and they're not, you know, it's not like they're being rude or trying to insult you. But that's what I tried to epitomize. Very straightforward. You're not going to talk about stuff like that. So I kind of tried to epitomize that in Inspector Schlepper, and he knows what he's talking about, of experience, and he doesn't want Roscoe interfering with his investigation no uncertain terms. So it was a fun character to write. It's amazing. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he does change his attitude a little bit at the end, but I think the reader gets a better feel for the fact that the Bonaireans Police Department was actually on top of things better than what they might have thought they were on top of.
Now I know why you call the team the Rockford team. I got that.
Yeah.
I thought that was right. That was clever. I have the book in front of me, by the way, people. So if I want to know something again, I just look at it. So, are there any other characters that I left out? First of all, how did the ME determine that Tiffany was didn't drown? That somebody drowned her?
Well, I don't want to give away too much about some of the investigative parts here, but
no.
I mean, it was. There's just ways they can do it. I mean, number one, you know, is there blood? Is there water in the lungs? Is there, you know, the pupils in the back of the eye burst? You know, if you're strangled, things like that. They can determine on autopsies, and so that's pretty much what happened there. And that was again, Uncle Ralph had to see what was on the report.
Mm-hmm. So. Without giving anything away, because I don't give things away. Also, my reviews are straight to the point, but I don't give any spoilers. And like I said before, I write only positive reviews, and if a book isn't at least 3.5 to 4 stars, I just write a summary and won't post it on Amazon because I don't pan people's work. That's just not me.
That's nice
of you. And for those people that want to know, you know, I don't get paid to do a review, ever. Ever, because that's not right. My opinion is my opinion, and if you don't like it, what can I say? I try. But anyway, Roscoe figures out who the killer is, which, of course, I'm not going to say, after someone reveals something he didn't know. So how did you create the last scene that really can get you to want to catch your breath a couple of times? And how did you create the ending without giving it away? That takes talent, because you see, I wrote my new book is, I got a title, everybody, finally, and yeah, I did, but the title of the book is What If, ? And it's 8 stories. What if you lived in different kinds of worlds that are not like the one that we live in, but are more difficult to live in? That's all I'm going to say. And when I thought about it, I said, each of them, yeah, it's different. And I'm going to get people to read it before to tell me if I should bother to publish it. Well, give me some nice blurbs and tell me if I have to fix something, because it is. So the endings are always the hardest thing for me. And two of the stories I left to the thought of the reader to say how they wanted to end, which I thought would be really cool. So the last thing, how did you create the ending without giving it away? Because that's the hardest thing in the book, to figure out how are you going to tie it all together. How did you do that without giving it away and without saying who the person is that did it, to where I didn't mention it all?
Well, number one, it took me months because I kept rewriting and rethinking and re-waiting and redeciding. I knew I wanted, you know, pretty much a lot of aspects. I wanted all the main characters there. I didn't want it to be a situation where, you know, in the old shows where they gather everybody in a room and, oh, you thought this, and, oh, but we know it was you because of this, and it wasn't you because of that. And they go through it. I wanted it to be kind of action-packed, and I think with everything there and multiple arms and you know, people peril and in danger and that stuff, he had to make a couple of decisions real fast. And how can I do it? Because I didn't want, my God, I don't want to give it away either.
No.
I don't want to talk about too much. I mean, so there's a little bit of airplane ending, and there's some guns, and there's a hostage, and there. So it's being fun to write, and again, I natural beauty into how, you know, how, what here, you know, what really cool. It's stuff that's awesome. No, and I don't know who listening hasn't read the book, so I don't want to talk.
I'm finding that, you know, what happens is sometimes people listen during the show, and then I'm going to post a link after the show because I just put it public. And I don't do chat rooms because people are not too bright. And I don't want to hear any nasty comments, and I'm not interested in what they have to say. If they have a question, they could ask it on my Facebook wall, and they can say whatever they want. But if it's negative, Fran doesn't want to hear it, ever. I don't do anything, you know, like that at all. But
good for you.
Yeah, I won't, because you know what? Everybody's opinion is different, and everybody's book is special to them. And if they put the words on the paper, then it's not my place to. I don't want anybody to pan somebody's work, especially when I'm on the phone, because then I'll just have to answer them in writing, and they won't like what I'm going to say. So. Do you see Roscoe, this is my little question, as a police consultant, actually as a pay consultant, or getting his PI license finally? That's just my thought.
So I've thought about that, and part of that, see, one of the problems that Roscoe has is the fact that he's not a PI, that he's not a paid consultant. He has a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of slick and sly on how he gets his information, how he moves forward. Make Roscoe or pay consultant from the police force, to me, forces me, it allows me to be lazy as an author, because just say, hey, I'm a consultant with the police force, so I get all the information. I want Conklin to have to work for that a little harder. And by not being part of the police consultant and PI gig, by just being a private individual trying to figure out what happened, then you know what? It makes me as an author more ingenious ways, more devilish ways that he has to figure this stuff out. And so actually I'm myself to try and be a little more creative than go for the, what in this situation might be the paid consultant. Because remember, Roscoe doesn't want to be involved in any of this stuff either. This one just fell on his lap. He wasn't out looking for it. If you're a PI or a paid police consultant, then what is, you know, people, you know, you're going out and doing all this stuff for people you don't even know, and you don't have a vested interest in it. But by these things falling into his lap, all of a sudden he has a vested interest in pay is not why he's doing it. He's doing it because he needs to fucking work close. Like in the book I'm writing, Paradise Cove, they have the same characters and it's on Bonaire. Again, the situation just falls into his lap and he needs to... solution is, but he doesn't want to be part of...
I was just going to ask that question. Where do you see him in Arabella next? What is, and what that's you said Paradise Cove is next, right? And
yes,
where do you see them next? And are you going to up their relationship? I have to throw that in. It's, you know, typical girl question.
Now their relationship is going to be about the same, a little bit.
Oh,
but there's
okay.
Going to be there's a big there's a point of contention. I wouldn't say friction, but a point of contention that occurs that. That's going to it's going to force a big decision.
Oh dear!
All I can say.
You can't break them up because I like her. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you're going to have to give her own series. Because I said so.
Well, that's interesting thought too. About that.
I told you I come up with these things out of nowhere. Which is a problem because usually I get what the book is about and usually more people tell me that you understand what it's about. Well, he did this because of his friends. He wanted to get to the bottom of why they were killed, right? So before we end, where can we learn more about you, your work, and what have you written anything else besides this?
No, this is my debut novel, and I've really, other than a few short stories and stuff like that, that's never really gone anywhere. I've never really written anything that I would want to read. But you can go to my website, davengoodwinbooks.com, and check out. I got a little bio out there and a few spot reviews. Ignore the appearances section because there's not going to be any appearances for a while, I don't think. I got a Facebook page, Dave Goodwin author, and it has a little info about me and you can on. But find me on Facebook, Goodwin author, or check out Ocean View Publishing. They're my one. They have
fantastic.
A little. Yeah, they are. They really are. I am very, very lucky to be involved with Ocean View.
You are.
I got. It's kind of a little funny story. I had 75 rejections from publishers and agents, and I emailed the Ocean View and said, hey, can I submit to you guys? Because they usually require an agent, and I didn't have any. And I told them, I followed Ocean View. They came to reception back in 2008, and I actually beta read for one or two of their authors, and some of their authors had actually read my stuff and liked it, and I told them, I'd sure like to submit. They said sure, submit 30 like, and then they came back a few days, hey, read the whole thing, and then I sent them the whole thing, and about a week and a half later they offered me a contract. So I was really bored by the fact that they let me without an agent, and the second thing is they liked it so much they right on it and offer me a contract.
They're fantastic. Every book I get from them is 5 stars. I haven't gotten a clunker yet. I have a whole bunch on my chair that are not out yet that I'm going to read.
I
love Ocean View.
Yep. Fantastic people. Good business, but fantastic people. That's what I think really drives forward. The people on their staff, the people they... themselves, the people they work with are all just fantastic. I don't think you can do any better than Ocean View.
Well, I just finished. For those of you that want to know what I've read this week, too many. Let me tell you. Fire and Vengeance by Robert McCoy is Ocean View. It's coming out July 7th, and because the publishing companies are having trouble sending the books, I picked that one up first, and I read that. I'm also started James Patterson's Hawk, and I've read a whole bunch this week. Of course, your book, Diver's Paradise. For those of you that didn't read it, we're going to find out how many thousands of places you can find it. My 5-star review is on Amazon if they ever tell me that they like it. It's on Just Review, so you could read it. Kate White's book I just finished, and One Day, Have You Seen Me? That's just some of what I've read this week, which is a whole lot more. Usually what I do, but this because of all what's going on, is I usually, you know, have like my picks of the month. So maybe later I'll just pick out 10 books and tell everybody to buy them on my Facebook wall. People read everything. So how can people learn more? You have a Facebook, you're on Amazon, you're on Barnes & Noble, you're everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely everywhere. Again, my website is davingoodwinauthor.com, and Davin, D-A-V-I-N, goodwinauthor.com. You can also find me on Facebook pretty easily with, what is Facebook?
That's how I found you. I think I asked for the book. I don't do that very often, though. I just want you to know. I don't know. It looked so interesting. And when I said Ocean View, I go, okay, I'm going to take this. So I want to thank you a million times. And yes, you are on May 28th with everybody else. And I sent you the questions. I sent you the questions so you can have an idea of what we're going to do. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Everybody, you know, says what they have to say. Charles Salzberg, RG is great. Dick is great. Tom Walsh is really interesting. His book, Post Diem, scared the daylights out of me because if you know the coronavirus, his book had an incident about a very strange virus that started in China, and the characters in the book went back in time so that they would prevent it from coming here in the present. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah. So I want to thank you very much. It's beautiful outside. It's sunny. It's 55 degrees, which is hot. And I don't need a jacket. This is fantastic. And everybody, thank you so much, Dan. And this has been really great. And it made my day. Made me smile, which is good. Everybody have a great day. And bye.
And I appreciate it.